May the sacred presence, as the one who said he would abide in the teaching of the Archive, may we follow this his glorious example and tread with unfaltering step this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment. All the days that fade to the past, the path of unsuffered, to the town beyond the welcome, everybody. We're going to have some announcements.
Yeah. People in the Saturday, we have an all-day workshop from 8:20 in the morning until 4. We're going to do a deep dive on various forms and practices, including our formal meal. So you can sign up on our website for registration tomorrow. And then the following Saturday, we had a one day, we have a to 5 p.m. And you can also sign up for that on our website and closes next Thursday. Thank you.
So, welcome everybody. Let's touch bases with any insights in the homework last week. We had with the recollection practice, we had some of you were carrying on with the recollection practice, just going through the day, touching points of interest in the body, like icky feelings, things that are not so good. And then I suggested maybe a little bit more of an investigation, maybe finding those points in the day, and then maybe some investigation around precepts and whether any of those feelings might have some kind of success in some of the precepts and any kind of rubbing up against any of the precepts that we might have certainly. Okay, so no, there wasn't. Sorry, that was nice. So, with the recollection practice, we're asking you at the end of the day to maybe go through the day and look for those moments in the day where there's like tension in the body or just general ickiness or just kind of like lightly go through the day and acknowledge those points of tightness in the body. And so you can have, it doesn't matter which way you go, from back, you can start from where you are at the end of the day and go through that way, or start at the beginning of the day. But the point is just to kind of just recite kind of the feeling tone of the day and things that might have missed you, you know, but did register. And so we're doing that every day during the precepts and just kind of getting a feel for like what's going on our interior lives through the day, through the work day or through our general day. That's basically.
Yeah. Kristen here. The suggestion to the recollection practice when brushing the teeth is really helpful. That's helped me do it consistently and not forget. I found that I noticed it like so I do the precepts and meditation in the morning. I noticed that it comes up more often. Well, like I notice it in the moment, like as soon as the sticking point happens, and I'm like, oh, that's this precept, and so that's what was happening before, and yeah, now with the reminder to do it when I brush my teeth, then I can recollect them.
I also was helped by the brushing teeth thing. But I would say, I don't know if I'm the only one, but I find that when I'm trying to tie like actual things to the precepts, I overthink everything. And when I review it, I'm like, I got to look at the presets again because I'm like, I don't know which one this is, right? And then most of these, I feel like what comes after the dash sometimes like makes me question my initial thought. Like something will happen and I'll be like, well, I wasn't intoxicated. And I'm like, well, yeah, okay, dispel delusion. Yeah, that's like relevant. But that is also like just as relevant as like, it happened at the same time as like not speaking dishonestly, but it was kind of like not thinking honestly, but it was also kind of like the, you know what I mean? So it was like they kind of compound.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them are in play, right? One, you know, they're not like separate from each other. So yeah, I think that's all right. I don't think,
well, it feels kind of like stressful. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, I just break, you know, like,
familiar, right? So we're just kind of like, you know, even if you catch yourself getting frustrated because you're hearing there's lots of things aspects to it, that's okay. You just move on to like it. We're just getting used to that process of like, is it in play? Is it not in play? Okay, you know. If I've said any of this is easy, I apologize. It's not easy. Yeah, you can do this year after year for decades, and you're going to get something out of it. So that would probably be the definition, not easy. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing about like each precept you could like interpret in a bunch of different ways. So killing, you can find it in all of them, right? Like cutting off of you can imagine that, right? And so they all reduce into each other. And so in a way, like it might be easier to sort of like, what's the one thing that like kind of combines it all? Like, except your experience, maybe, right? Something very broad, it's easy to remember. And it's a little like, it might not give you enough leverage. Right, like if it's always true, right, it might not be specific enough to kind of like push you to do something a little differently. And so having the 10 different precepts, it gives you enough like specificity that like there's some leverage, there's some actually kind of changes how you are seeing something, but it's not too many to remember. Like you can still remember 10 basically. For me that kind of works out.
For me, it's Raju. For me, this time around, the ones that are sticking out most significantly are the second commentary. Those are really landing for me in a different way than they have in the past. In the past, you know, they were just there and sort of poetic and nice and didn't make any sense. And I don't know that they make any more sense, but they land differently.
So just, we're going to do two precepts tonight. We're going to zoom in on, do not speak dishonestly and do not become intoxicated. So that's the overall topic of this class. And just to run a little bit with what Reiki was pointing out there, there's several parts to each one of these precepts. There's a negative formulation, do not speak dishonestly. There's a positive, communicate truthfully. And then there's two different verses of commentary. So for this precept, in the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly. And then the second piece, the Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew covers the earth, and within it lies the truth. So you've got the title, which has the positive and negative, and then you've got this. The second one is attributed to Bodhidharma, and it always starts in the realm of the. And what it's really giving there is kind of the absolute perspective on the precept. So, and one way of like, thinking about that is like in the mind of deep meditation, what is this? How do you hold this precept? So putting forth not one word, right? Like, yeah, if you're not speaking, you're probably not speaking dishonestly. So that's great. That's not like. So there's kind of this literal version, this in the realm of the absolute version, and then there's the more like relational, compassionate, like interactive version. And so there are just three different lens with which you might use to, get a little more nuance to how this precept plays out. Yeah. Yes.
Can you just keep, that was really helpful in the person, could you go on to that example and talk about the real sentence and the final
part of it?
Yeah, it's in parallel to how you did it.
Sure. Thank you. So the Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew covers the earth, and within it lies the truth. So, like, what I would suggest doing for, like if you're working with that verse at the end of each precept, like don't get too literal with, like, what's the Dharma wheel, or why is it turning, or but like what's the like kind of tone there? Like, it's sort of a koan that's like giving you some flavor, like a poem. And for me, what that tells me about this precept, like it's similar actually to stealing is the way I kind of experience it, but like the sweet dew covers the earth, within Eliza Fear, there's this, that to me gives this sense of like it's like there's like beneficent quality, right? Like that just is sort of naturally in you. Like, it's like you can't see where it comes from. It just kind of happens, and it's gorgeous, right? And when lying looks like a good idea, we're not recognizing that, right? We're somehow seeing like this starkness, this lack, this that's why it's similar to stealing, and we're trying to like figure out a way past it. Whereas like, if we could settle into the like beauty of the actual experience, like it's all there. Yeah. We're kind of into a precept now, so I'll keep going. Yeah, I think, you know, like big picture, what this precept is about is a quality of sincerity with our own experience. So, one of our primary practices is mindfulness, is bringing our awareness to what's going on internally, and trying to do that with more clarity. And often what we find are aspects of our experience that we would rather not put our attention on, right? We notice that we're scared, or we're selfish, or we're irritated, and that's not pleasant. And so there's a fairly significant incentive to lie to yourself, right? To be a little sneaky with how we perceive that, and not be authentic, not be sincere. And so, this communicate truthfully, like it's how we deal with other people, but it's also with how we meet our own experience, and that we're big enough to allow that to kind of unfold exactly as it is. Yeah, another thing I associate with this precept is like a quality of wholeheartedness, of like going for it. And I feel like fear is often one of the things that like it's like a precondition of lying, like a sense of like, it's not going to go well for me, or it's not going to go well for them if I say the truth. Like that fear is what like allows a lie to happen. And if we are more courageous and more wholehearted and like I'm going to have this experience, I'm just like doing it, like it kind of like, it sort of turns on the light in a way that like makes the lie not make sense. Right? It doesn't seem necessary anymore. Again, a lot easier said than done. Right? I think what Reiju is pointing out, one thing that Reiju is pointing out, is that there's a huge, you know, in communication, there's quite a spectrum here of like just like deceiving someone intentionally to withholding a portion of information to tilting the flavor a little bit, like exaggerating some aspect. Like there's lots of ways in which we might do this. I think it applies across the board. It's just more subtle. That's my sense. I mean, test it, right? Like that's one of the things we do here. Like, see if you can find an like catch yourself in the next couple hours or next 24 hours when you're like tiptoeing near a not fully true statement, and do a little scan. Like, can you find that? Like, is there a little like spell of fear somewhere? Thank you.
Sort of like write speech, or like choosing to highlight something that's positive, or like being context specific. So there is kind of a lean. So like, granted, there's subtlety, but like, could you speak to like identifying subtlety that's like, yeah, like this space is not really worth being into. Like, yeah, I'm feeling something that's like kind of negative, but I don't really want to bring it up right now because it doesn't feel like this is the time for it.
Yeah. You know, like the Lotus Sutra, for instance, is full of examples, not full, but there's numerous examples in the Lotus Sutra of the Buddha and others who are held up as models lying. And it's with wholesome intent and wholesome result, and yet, they're lying. So sure. I would say, like, my guess is, and this is again, you know, this is a mindfulness experiment for you to go test out, is that there are times when that sprout isn't there, right? Where you're coming from is not from that place of kind of like sneaky fear, but it's actually from a place of caring and clarity about like what you need or like what resonates with the situation. You know, like someone may ask you, hey, how are you doing? And it's clear that you've got about a 10-second interaction with them. Like, it's not the time to drop the emotional bomb, right? Like, I'm glad you asked. Like, I'm doing okay. No, it could be better. You know, like, that works. You're Ruby.
Hi, I'm Ruby. I'm curious. Well, personally, and this is very personal, but sometimes I feel intoxicated on power, like the need for power, like desire for control. And I know that is unhealthy, but I can't help but feel that and want it a lot.
Sure, I think you know, you're in good company. That's a that is common. Not everybody likes that, but a lot of people do. Yeah. I think there's like you know, like we are wired certain ways, we're conditioned certain ways, like it's really helpful to get to know like the uniqueness of how you're built, right? Like what your tendencies are, what your blind spots are, what your like preferences, etc. The goal of all that like self-knowledge, like investigation and clarity, hopefully that you're developing, is that you're less constrained by all of it. Right. And so you might recognize like, oh, I really want that like, you know, sense of power in this situation, and then like feeling tight and antsy about it. In the past when I run into this, like you could do it. So you might find a way to kind of like take an exit ramp off that sense of tension. You don't have to do it like that. There's other options. Yeah. Note if I didn't say, please beat yourself up about that. That had one yet.
This is more of a comment than a question. When I'm about to tell a lie or have that impulse come up, I know I'm about to tell a lie. So that's a pretty easy one to back up from and go, maybe not do that. Let's think of what else can do. But the subtleties, the nuances, it gets stuck there. Mm-hmm. And something that I've found is helpful is a little book that some of you have probably read called The Four Agreements. And one of the agreements is be impeccable with your word. And what that has helped me with is like, okay, what you're about to say now, maybe it's not a lie, it might be the truth. What is going to be essentially the karmic fallout of what you're about to say? And is it going to be harmful to other people? And so I just wanted to put that out there as something that I found helpful. The others will as well.
One thing about another like quality that I find related to this precept of not speaking dishonestly is that I tend to, if I'm kind of caught by that wish, chances are I'm framing the situation in terms of will someone notice, right? Will I get caught, right? Which is a very contracted self. Right, it's a much like smaller, less comfortable me than I like to inhabit. So, like note that, like look, like if that's like that can be one of those like hells. And part of what's like absurd there is that like you know like we can. We might fool people enough to sort of get by, but I don't think we really fool people. And we certainly don't fool the universe, right? Like interconnection is pervasive. Like we are not separate. And so like to imagine that like we might get away with that, it's like a question is ill-posed. It doesn't compute in that way.
As I hear everyone speaking on the precept topic, I've been noticing just how intellectually like communicative we have been, how we speak so much, and I have just been in a personal preservation space of really like almost withholding but also not really interested in communicating nearly as much as what I feel like the outside world is doing and needing right now. So there is a big portion of like withholding, but then what I've been noticing is that then it leaves a lot of space for energetic communication, and that seems to speak even more louder than words. So there's also a piece of this where I'm questioning. It's like the do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. But then even just thinking on the pure precepts of, you know, release all self-attachment, take selfless action. It's almost like, how do you just become so clear within that space, that space of like not communicating and allowing your energy to be as truthful and like positive and peaceful as, so you do not need to speak dishonestly. You also don't have to feel dishonestly. It's just maybe a depth that I've just been feeling in all of this.
Yeah. I think the, like, part of what I'm getting from what you're describing there is, like valuing the subtlety, like allow, like you really want to be attuned to what's happening around you, and what's really helpful about that is when that's the case, we get a lot of information, we get a lot of feedback from the universe. If we're highly defended, if we're highly invested in this strategy of self, we get a lot less information. And so I want to ask you all a question in a group, but I want to give a couple little like practices around this precept. And one of them is to really want feedback, to want to be affected by other people. Part of that little sprout of fear that might make a lie possible is, you know, it imagines that being affected is going to hurt, right? So I would say challenge that, want that interactiveness in life. Another is notice if we're using language, either in our head or verbally, that is like things like always or never or all the time or absolutely or whatever, stuff like that. That's a pretty big clue that there's some stress happening, and it's basically like, that's a lie of perception, right? So we can start to address it there and how we're framing the situation for ourselves. There's more, but I want to give you a question. Are people familiar with the term near enemy? Okay, most, so some are, some aren't. So if you're trying to cultivate compassion, a near enemy of that is pity. So if I'm aiming at compassion where I'm really feeling, feeling compassionate, but I miss, pity is kind of like compassion, but there's this sense of superiority that I'm not affected by that, and it's kind of separate from the situation. So that's, pity is called like a near enemy of compassion in the like four Ramaviharas. So I'm curious, you can like find two other people and talk about like, what's a near enemy for you in truthfulness, in communicating truthfully? How might you miss that? All right,
go.
Group to three. Well, this will be short, like three to 4 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Okay, that's that. All right. I'd like to share with you, do not become intoxicated. Okay. Do not become intoxicated. Polish clarity, dispel delusion. In the realm of the intrinsically pure Dharma, not harboring delusions is the precept of not becoming intoxicated. We are naturally pure. There is nothing to be deluded about. This is enlightenment itself. Understand this truly, and no intoxicants can be taken in. So when I first was introduced to the precept, like many people, I was like, oh, do not kill, that's going to be, you know, tick that box, I can't see me killing anybody, do not steal, I'm not, you know, stealing. Although we did establish last week that I am a thief, why did I do not misuse sexuality, okay, I'm not going to abuse people or take advantage, okay. And then we get to this one, I'm like, oh, come on, a glass of wine at the end of the day, come on, what can be the problem there? Please, don't take that away from me. But of course, it's much more than that, right? The first thing that comes to mind is probably alcohol and drugs, right? But that's not the language, right? It's do not become intoxicated. That's like much, much bigger. And actually much more interesting. So there's a long list of intoxicants, right? I mean, like anybody could be intoxicating at some point. I made a little list, right? Just first things that came to my mind. Caffeine, chocolate, food, yes, food. Especially in Portland. Yeah. But what about fame? Oh my God, that's got to be pretty intoxicating, doesn't it? And then power, which obviously the frame is in the news every day, right? We see like the intoxication of power, right? And then a modern one, those are classics, of course, a modern one, social media. Wow, that one is like, whew, that those devices are, there's clever people have worked out those devices and that software and those devices, right? But then, like, what about, like, when I think about social media and the world we're living in right now, when I think about intoxication, I think about hatred and, like, ill will and resentment. And, like, I can see this in my friends. I'm not talking about some, like, just general, like, internet sphere, like there's a kind of like there's like a, these things can give you a kind of a bit of a hit as well, right? Like, you know, there's something really intoxicating about like ill will and hatred. That there's something else we get from that too, but like all encompassing though, like all like really big. Okay, and then what about thoughts? Problem solving, when I think about like my own personal intoxicated, I mean, I've got plenty of others too, but thinking, thoughts, like I can really get into like there's like a hit there as well, like problem solving and kind of like just daydreaming, you might call it, right? But just like the high of like thoughts, that can be intoxicating. Okay, what about, intoxication of the self. Okay, you know, so last week, I mentioned it a minute ago. So last week, I was telling you about like passion carry, right? And I was telling you about the instances that I got like a super sweet deal because they mispriced a lot of boxes of things that I got, right? And then, but why did I not respond? Why did I not respond in a wise way, in a passionate way? I was in a crappy mood. I was like in a self-centered kind of like I was mad. I was like, some people had not done something that they said they were going to do. So I pissed off. I was like, I was intoxicated with kind of like myself. You know what I mean? And so I could steal because I was just like in my own, like, I don't care about you. I was like, you know. Okay, and then the big one, of course, those may be a big ones. All right, what about romantic love? Oh, God. How about that intoxication? This room has not been intoxicated by that, you know? Something maybe something that probably didn't even, I think it was only invented like 300 years ago, wasn't it? Romantic love. I mean, if you talked to somebody like 300 or 400 years ago, they wouldn't know what you were talking about. You were talking about romance, whatever. That kind of love just didn't really exist. It was like poets and like artists kind of invented it, and we're all like in it. Like, oh my God, it's the most important. That's the biggest intoxication of them all, I think. Yeah. Okay. I've got some friends in who exercise a lot, right? So this is like a real positive thing for our bodies, right? Taking care of ourselves. But like sometimes, like I think you can see it in some people when it's like it looks like an avoidance or something. It's like too much, right? And there's an intoxication like there. They get a high from it as well. There's a little, like the body gives off a little high, right? Much like when I'm thinking, right? There's a little like hit, a little drug hit. But that can also be detrimental, right? Okay, what about the mystical? Can that be intoxicating? What about religion? What about Buddhism? What about meditation? How about that? So in themselves, like they're not really detrimental, and they're not escapes in themselves, right? It's how we get in it, you know what I mean? So it's how we use these things. And so with our other precepts that we've looked at the last few weeks, like intention comes up a lot. It's like, what's the intention? And with this one, it's the same way. It's like all these things I've mentioned, they're not particularly, they're not particularly bad or good or whatever. It's the intention that are we trying to manipulate the feelings that we have right now? Are we uncomfortable right now? Like, what's the reason? Why are we doing it? You know? Often it's like dissatisfaction, like with like what's going on right now. Like that, it's just an uncomfortable feeling. Or sometimes we're feeling okay. We just want the sky a bit bluer or the grass a bit greener, you know? But like there's something we want to change. Okay. I do have a question for you, but first of all, how does that ring for everybody? Again, like, is there obvious things that I've missed, or is there things I've brought up that maybe that doesn't ring true for me? I'm like, you know, how does that feel?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel. When I hear the word intoxicated, it was feeling a bit abstract to me, and it sounds like from your examples, it feels like there's like an overlap of kind of like delusion and also addiction a little bit, or
can be.
Does that not?
Yeah, I think delusion is right on.
I think, again, right,
it's intention, you know? But yeah, the delusion, there is a delusion there for sure.
Okay. It kind of distorts.
It's an escape, or you know what I mean? It's like wanting to lose control, or just kind of like wanting to like be taken away. Like
escaping.
Yeah, that's definitely escaping. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Gabrielle. The thing that I was thinking of in terms of intoxication is wanting to be right. Or thinking that I'm right, winning an argument, and sort of the selfishness of that is intoxicating when it happens. especially if you have a relationship with someone else who has that so then you're sort of part of your relationship is the cycle of each of you exchanging that intoxication, experiencing that intoxication. It's very toxic. And
when you're in a situation where you're living with somebody like that, and it really helps if you're both working on the same thing. Like you just trigger each other. There's patterns of behavior, especially with loved ones, and we just fall into those tracks, don't we? You know what I mean? So it's really nice when the other person also is willing to look at when they jump on the tracks, you know? But if not, you know, good luck.
Thank you.
Just know that you'll always be right. So.
I'm really curious what folks' perception of naturally pure is.
We are naturally pure?
Yes. What might that look like and mean?
Well, I don't think, for me, that's like, we don't need, so this movement on wanting to get rid, like move away from what's going on, like right now, whatever that is, internally or whatever, is like, we don't need to. That's like, we need to, like, that's okay. Just accept ourselves, right? We're everything we need, you know?
Even if we're intoxicated.
Interesting. Well, if we are intoxicated, we are intoxicated.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, John again. Hi. So I figured I would share my like personal story, I guess, is just that to kind of like validate this and all the things that you're saying, is that I actually came here, found Dharma Rain through Dharma Recovery PDX, mm-hmm. and did you know recovery meetings and stuff here, and got sober in March. And the process there, I was kind of like, yeah, I, you know, once the alcohol's gone, once whatever is gone, everything will get better. And it turned out that it's like not that simple at all. And that there's like, I feel like I discovered more intoxicants than I ever knew existed after removing the big ones. You know what I mean? It almost feels like you can see like everything you're talking about, right? But it all kind of boils down to this like this ideal self that I'm chasing, this like, what's going to fix me now? You know, it's like that idea. Yeah. And then that kind of goes back to like what I really like about that we are naturally pure. And there was one of the recommended readings on Dharma Rain talks about this, but like kind of the idea of like a bowl of food that is just like doesn't need anything more, but we're like dumping sriracha on it, you know what I mean? Where it's like if you just eat the food as it exists, it's really good. But that like that's the thing, is like when you don't believe that you're naturally pure, I can be grasping at literally everything. And I'm like, this game will fix me. A new dog will fix me. Like everything will fix me. And that's just like completely like missing the point. Right. So it becomes very clear once you actually start to strip things away.
Yeah. Thank you. And just one more point. We get a lot of feedback from maybe society, from family structures or whatever, like that we're not, like we are lacking in something. So it's not surprising, right? You know what I mean? That we are searching for business, right? Okay. Can we quickly go into groups again, maybe with different people this time? And we'll quickly have a little powwow. I've got a question for you. So if you can look around this room and if there's somebody you haven't shared with in the past, please hustle over to them and introduce yourself. Thank you. Okay, here's the question. Thank you for moving rapidly. Okay, so have a little think about this, please, before you speak. What's the substance or activity that you regularly engage in that you may use to escape or avoid? And one point here, I just want to just point out, look out for this territory here. There's a lot of judgment around this about self and others. Please look out for that. We're not judging. We're just kind of like maybe searching for something we could share that maybe we're looking to escape or avoid. Okay? And we'll just have a few minutes of that. Thank you.
All right. Is there an insight kind of that needs to be shared right now about that conversation? All right. Okay. So in that case, we're going to do Vespers, but I do want to say, if you have been taking these classes over the last month, we've got another month to go. Exploring the ethical teachings of Buddhism, and the culmination of this class is we'll do a week-long retreat, meditation retreat, and at the end of that retreat, those who would like to take the precepts can receive them. So if you're interested in that and you haven't had a conversation with me about it, let me know after class and we can schedule a time to have that conversation. All right, we will do Vespers.